by 2050, it is projected that the population will be close to 10 billion. It is so huge that we cannot carry on in the same manner that we do today.
Hi, you're listening to the Gibble Podcast. Here, we interview guests that have an inspiring view on our built environment. From waste management, to bio-based materials, to new models of ownership. Gibble is an initiative of Trilux. As head of sustainability at Trilux, Vic Nanton is all about building towards a circular economy. His core belief is to be mindful of the earth and to not waste resources. He already felt that at a very early age, as a 7-year-old boy living in Kuala Lumpur. What's his story? And what role can lighting play in reducing our carbon footprint?
So my name is Vic Nanton. I'm the head of sustainability at Trilux in the UK. But I also work in projects, so I'm actively working as a project engineer as well. Trilux is a company that's been established for, well, in January it'll be 111 years. We are a leading lighting manufacturer based in Germany with quite strong presence in Europe and other parts of the world.
Okay, and how did you end up in the field of sustainability? You say you're head of sustainability. How was that path for you?
I talk about the recent years. It's really to do with great people that I've been fortunate enough to work with. Some of my clients, which are consulting engineers, sustainability engineers, some of the architects. And I was privileged enough to work on some amazing projects with sustainability requirements. So I've already had the passion for sustainability. And about 3.5 years ago, there was an opportunity. The company was looking for someone to sort of champion sustainability. As soon as I saw that communication, I basically picked the phone up, spoke to my MD, and I said something along the lines as, "I'm your man." And he went, "I'm your man for what?" That led on to a couple of follow-up meetings. And shortly after that, I presented to the UK board, the group sustainability director, Catherine, who was also present on the meeting as well. Not long after that, I was appointed as the head of sustainability. But my sort of story probably starts way, way before that. Sustainability is really something that's innate to me. I would say it's part of my upbringing, my culture. When I was growing up, we were always taught to be very considerate about other people, considerate about the environment, the nature. And we were always taught to never waste, never be wasteful. If you like, I can tell you a little story that maybe will give you a...
Yeah, sure. Yes.
So when I was a little boy growing up in Kuala Lumpur, where I'm from, Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, many people know Kuala Lumpur as a capital city, a really big city. But I'm talking about the late 70s, when I was about 7-8 years old. My father had a farm, quite a reasonably sized farm. We had something like, I don't know, 150 chickens, 30, 40 goats, turkeys, ducks, guinea fowls. And the farm was being taken care of. Someone very close to me who was like a granddad to me. I used to tag along, just follow him everywhere when I went and spent my weekends over there. So it's not like I lived in the farm, but I used to go and visit as and when. And he used to go around the construction sites around our farm because at that time, which today is actually the bigger part of Kuala Lumpur, but back then they were construction sites. So he used to go around the canteens at the construction site collecting food waste for the farm animals. So I think that was really sort of my early days of, I don't know, you can call it, you know, not being wasteful or reusing or, you know, circular economy, whatever you want to call it. But it was just being considerate and it was good food for the farm animals. There's another part to the story as well. So some of the times when I used to follow him around, I used to have a little lantern, but this was not just any lantern. It was quite a special lantern actually. So this is me, 7-8 years old, Vic Nanton, take a used jam jar, clean it all, poke holes on the lid, tied to a stick basically. And the source of the light was fireflies.
I don't think I've seen, well, I've seen them in movies, but I don't know if I've ever seen them in real life.
Fireflies basically glow. They glow and they emit a light. So this is me. I walk around with this granddad-like person. It was only certain times, normally like after rain or when it's dark. And I just used to just swoop my hand, and you would literally have 5 or 6 fireflies in your hand, and I just put them in the jar. And believe me, it did really make quite a bright light, you know, especially in the dark. But what's quite interesting about this story is fireflies are bioluminous. They are natural light. And who would have thought that many, many years later, I would be working for a company called Trilux Lighting, who are one of the leading lighting manufacturers in the world. And sustainability is a very big part of the company. So
yeah.
I guess it's always been in me.
That's so beautiful. Could you maybe explain a little further how that works out in your own life as well? That mindset of sustainability that was grown already on such an early age.
There are many things I can say. You get sayings like, you know, do unto yourself what you would do to others, you know, respect nature. These are some of the principles that I grew up with. And it's something that's just instilled in me. And I think in a lot of good people as well. A lot of good people always try and do the right thing. And that's been my motivation. Currently, I've been working for Trilux 10 years now. Over my career, I have had opportunities for promotions in other areas. And I just never felt it was me. But when this opportunity came about, I felt like, you know what, this is something that I can do passionately and I can actually make a difference and do the right thing.
Yeah. And when talking about what difference lighting can make, do you have any examples of this? We all know the LED lighting, that's far more sustainable option than like TL lighting. Are there other ways that you can build a better, more sustainable house with lighting?
You're right in the sense that LED is not new anymore. You've got good LED and bad LEDs and higher performing ones, just like any product. I think is to be selective and choose. And sometimes it's worth just paying a little bit more because they last longer. But lighting controls is really how you can sort of maximize on the efficiency and be more sustainable and stuff. When I say lighting control, if you're talking about a home, you've got smart homes where they have got apps that you can use. If you take that into a commercial environment, then you've got building management system or lighting management system, lighting monitoring, asset management. Simply what that means is use lighting in a smart manner when it's required, where it's required, and the right amount of light. Because a lot of times, I'm sure you've also walked around housing or buildings and at night and you see it's all switched on, but there's no one present in it. So with lighting control, let it be a simple app for the house or let it be a higher performing, more commercially used system. Lighting controls or lighting management is the way you can sort of maximize on the efficiency and to reduce carbon footprint, really.
Yeah. And when looking at the whole picture, looking at our built environment, how big of a role can the right lighting play if you compare it to maybe other factors in the built environment?
It is massive. So in a building, lighting accounts for up to 40 to 40+% of energy. And what people don't realize so much is, well, okay, what's the connection between energy, electricity, and carbon? When you take a light fitting, or anything for that matter, when it's manufactured and it's produced, if we take an example, you know, I'm showing you my mouse here, yeah? This is something that when it is manufactured, when they are sourcing the raw materials to make this, and when they are distributing this, as in the transportation and all, the carbon is very high on this. But when you're using this mouse, you know, a computer mouse, there's no carbon really, very little. Obviously, sometimes they've got a battery in that, you know, so it's very, very little. The difference between a light fitting's carbon footprint is during the use stage, when it is switched on. So the more the energy it uses, the higher the carbon footprint. So lighting can actually play a huge part in sort of reducing your carbon footprint. So designing a more efficient, a more durable, you know, also light or luminaire that can be repaired and smart, it really goes a long way towards reducing carbon.
That's yeah. And when looking at the concept of sustainable building, how big is that theme in the UK? Do you see a mentality shift on that part?
Absolutely. So I've always said this to, you know, people that I speak to on a regular basis. UK is only second to the Nordics country. So you take the likes of Norway and Sweden, The smaller country of Finland, for example, they're smaller countries and they've adopted, and they're rich countries and they've got less, you know, dynamics to deal with, you know. So they've always been quite ahead with that. So UK is only second to that. Sustainability is really big. To put it in context, in the built environment, building sector, one out of three building projects in the UK have some form of sustainability requirements. And these requirements are growing exponentially. If you talk about the mentality shift, it's driven by really things like ESG, which stands for environmental, social and governance, where a lot of the big companies have to abide to. Things like green financing. So the developers, the end clients are demanding for more because it's being sort of filtered from top down, really. And these requirements then cascade down to the supply chain and the value chain. So yes, it is huge and it's only going to get bigger.
Yeah, because do you see an urgency for that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, if you cast your mind back, I don't know whether you remember, some of us who are slightly older maybe, sort around the 80s, there was the hole in the ozone layer.
That's before my time, but I've heard about the commotion.
So when this happened, it's literally like the film Apollo 13. It's like, Houston, we've got a problem.
Yeah.
Everyone sort of like, oh, wow, hole in the ozone layer and all that. But a few years later, everybody forgot about it, completely forgot about it. For me personally, I think it's been the last 3 or 4 years when you started getting the stark reports about ocean levels rising, you know, beyond a point where it's never, never, ever been. Global temperature rise as well, you know, and I think a lot of people are familiar with this 1.5 degree threshold. They said that once it is, you know, above pre-industrial times, the global temperature increases above 1.5 degree, you know, a lot of those catastrophic events start happening. So for me, it's really the last 3-4 years when the urgency came and, you know, that realization that we really need to do things differently. But I think if you talk about most of us, general public, just have to look at the last 1 year. Fire in Greece, Cyprus, the recent fires we had in Hawaii, the floods, you know, Germany had floods, you know, extreme temperatures, extreme weathers that we're having. I think it's really clear. And if I may quote the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres. Now, what he said was, you know this term global warming? We've heard this most of our life. The UN Secretary General said, the era of global warming has ended and the era of global boiling has arrived. So it's quite clear that we need to do things differently and with urgency.
Yeah. Do you see that it's speeding up because of that as well? The changes? The changes in the way we build or the how, as companies, we can do things differently on that part?
It is by many different aspects, really. There's a whole sort of regulatory wave that's coming. So there's the, you know, EU Green Deal. Recently, there was the lamp ban. I mean, if you talk about the lighting industry, so they've banned all sort of conventional lamp source, or they're banning. Most of it has. So fluorescents are being banned. Sodium lights are being banned. So it's not just the fact that people are more aware, yes, but the construction industry is very contractual. You know, until they're told to do something, it's normally a tick box exercise. However, having said that, I am now starting to get a lot of the different stakeholders starting to question things and really wanting to try and do things differently.
Yeah. When looking at lighting, what would be the easiest, most basic step you can take?
Switch off your lights when you don't need to use them. Well,
yeah.
There are, I mean, you'd be surprised. Let me ask you the question. In your house, have you got all LED lighting?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I should check.
There's a lot that we can do, but the simple things that people can do, and if every household did it, it will amount to a great deal. I'll give you an example. Many years ago, I changed most of my lights. Today, everything is LED, but I started by changing my bathroom lights. They were 50 watt halogen lights. I replaced them with LED lights, which are 3 watt. In my bathroom, it's only a small bathroom, there were 4 lights. 4 times 50, 200 watt. Changed to 3 times 4, 12 watt. So you can do the math. 200 wattage of energy being used, and also, well, I moved to 12 watt, but LEDs also last much, much longer. The halogen lamp used to fail every 1 year. So every year you need to replace them. So it's very wasteful. These LED lights that I fitted 10 years ago are still going.
Yeah, it's a pretty concise example of how you can change things. Hi, this is Jessica. Do you want to learn more about lighting and the circular economy? Read more on Vic Nantan and the project Skanska on getinspiredbylight.com, an initiative of Trilux. When zooming out a little bit, is there a project at Trilux that you said, well, that's a really good example of where they incorporated sustainable circular concepts, well, more than before?
Yeah, no, absolutely. There are several great examples. But one that I was personally involved in is a company called Skanska. Skanska is a leading electrical contracting company. So they work on a lot of building projects in UK, but also across Europe and globally as well. I was involved in the refurbishment of their new European head office in London.
Yeah. So it was a building that was already there with, I guess, also the interiors maybe. How did you refurbish it? What was the task really?
So about a year and a half ago, I received a phone call from Skanska's, one of the contracting team. They basically called me because I was involved in the original building. So, you know, the online fashion retailer ASOS, it was their call center. They had two buildings,
okay.
You know, two big blocks each, four floors each. But because of COVID and the change in how people are working and people are working from home and remotely, they did not need that much space. So Skanska took up one part of the building, four floors. But at that time, they called me to basically say, you know, we need to move things around. You've got your lighting in there and we want to buy quite a lot of new lighting. Could you work on the design with us? I immediately saw that opportunity and I spoke to them and said, look, there's an opportunity here for us to really do something great where we can work with you and we can take back the existing luminaires, use this whole concept of circularity or circular economy, if you want to call it, and we can refurbish the lights, reducing a lot of waste, but also a lot of cost. So that's how it sort of started. Yeah.
So instead of you have a new company that rents an existing building, instead of they strip out the whole interiors, the lights, everything and put in new things, they came to you and said, well, you were the original person who put up these lighting. Can you just refurbish them instead of just taking everything out?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't have that concept in their head. They came to basically say, well, we want to move some things around, but we need to buy lights from you.
All right, yeah.
It was a bit fortunate as well because I'm the head of sustainability. I'm always talking about circular economy and reducing waste. So it was really right up my street. I mean, initially, the contracting team, like I mentioned earlier, construction is very contractual. The Skanska's contract team is given a task and they just want to do that task. But once I started sort of getting meetings with the right people, you know, getting the management involved, the right stakeholders really, you know, the marketing team, the sustainability team got involved. They really saw the value in this and they jumped at the opportunity. The key was, you know, the kind of language. So when I was talking to them about circular economy, low carbon workplace, net zero aspiration, materiality, waste reduction, these are all sustainability terms that I widely use for, you know, ultimately that's to reduce carbon. And they have the same goals as well, to be, you know, zero carbon at a certain point. They saw the benefit. They realized that they can reduce their spend, so reduce cost. They can gain some really good publicity, but also sell the story to their clients as well. And like I said, they have a target of achieving net zero carbon by 2045. So it really sat well with them.
Yeah. Could you tell me something a bit about the process along the way?
We had to actually go back and look for record drawings, you know, so to find what we did originally. And I must explain that Skanska, being an electrical contracting company themselves, we didn't have another third party to instruct or work with and agree on. We agreed all of this directly with Skanska. Skanska carried out the works themselves. So things like we do one collection from site, take back the old luminaires. When everything is ready, we deliver back one time. We don't use outer packaging because it's going in our own trucks and in one delivery, we just use bubble wrap. They had to label and photograph everything. It came to our factory locally, and we labeled everything as well. So we got traceability of what we're taking back. We agreed on things like we would reuse whatever components possible. There are metal. So these are runs and runs of linear luminaires. They have got an aluminium body, like an aluminium extrusion, we call it. And because the luminaires are installed at a height at about 2.8 to 3 meters, we said to them, would you accept if the luminaire had a little bit of marks on it, a little bit of scuffs on it? So there was things like this that we had to agree because we are reusing, which they accepted. There was also a requirement where the light color was not appropriate, the existing light color. So we used special filters as well. So this is where we were a bit clever. We had a lot of site visit. We used special filters. We took back as much as we can. We recorded everything. We refurbished everything. We documented it and we then had it delivered. We supported them with the aspects of installation where we, you know, we were there to support and give them good advice. They were pretty good at what they did and it ran very smoothly.
Well, when looking at circularity, would it also be possible if it would have been another manufacturer?
Yes.
Because now it was Trilux Lighting already.
Absolutely. Being Trilux, it just made things easier, means that we knew exactly what we were dealing with. But we have also completed other projects where we've taken back luminaires that are much older, like 15 years old, from different manufacturers. So the answer is yes. The big result on this project, the real achievement here, I would say, is really working in partnership with Skanska. I always go on about this thing called shared value, is really thinking in the same manner. And that was key, really, the desire to do the right thing. And the results were outstanding. We saved 17 tons of CO2 equivalent. There was massive savings on raw material and waste as well.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So, and I'm really captivated by what you said earlier, that you can just also do it with other luminaires from other manufacturers. Is that something people think of? Well, when they acquire a new building and there's already a lot of luminaires hanging there, is it something that's known?
It is something that's gaining popularity. A lot of people are aware of it and are trying to do it. It is not always easy because sometimes the luminaires are too old. Sometimes you got to appreciate as well if they are using the same kind of ceiling. So if we take a box-like luminaire, which is, let's say, 600 by 600 square, and we're putting a 600 by 600 square, pretty straightforward. We replace them with the latest LED. We use the housing, whatever components we can, what we call harvesting back. But if the architect or the designer is completely changing the ceiling, it's difficult. However, there are other schemes that are now in place, which are amazing, where we are finding second home for the old luminaires. So where you take from one, you can actually use it elsewhere. And there's actually a company called Ricolite in the UK, and they've started an online depository where people can donate their old lightings and they find a home for it.
Yeah, this sounds pretty cool.
The refurbish of a building, it goes beyond lighting as well, obviously, right? Today, architects and designers are really big about where they are trying not to knock down an entire building when they're trying to build new. So they reuse as much as they can. They keep the bricks, they keep the shell, you know, they try and keep whatever aspects of the building they can to reduce waste and carbon. And this is becoming a big business.
Would you say the architects and designers are also a driving force behind this change?
Definitely.
Are they like the front runners?
The architects and the designers will speak to the clients. They start the project. They start designing the structure and everything very early on. We come on at a later stage and we then start filling that space up with lighting or carpets or heating or whatever. So architects are definitely in the forefront of it.
Yes, exactly. What do you think architects and designers could do to build in a more future-proof way?
There is a lot that not just architects and designers can do, all of us can do in the building services, right? But I think my short answer would be to constantly push the boundaries, to find new solutions. And it is important to really aspire to create outstanding spaces. It's no longer good enough to just meeting the standards. You need to go above and beyond that. what the architects, designers, and what we call the building services engineers, the electrical engineers or the mechanical engineers, they have the power to write the specification as in what they want in that building or project. So I would say write stronger specification with strict requirements on sustainability. Work closer with the key stakeholders. So again, this is about working in partnership. And really demand from the suppliers a much higher standard and that we can achieve this together.
Yes. And a question pops up in my head, and that's about the Skanska project. I can imagine for a lighting company such as Trilux that they would get a lot more profits from just putting in all new luminaires instead of refurbishing them. How did you sell the idea to your own company?
If we take Skanska as an example, and these are just rough figures really, we could have sold a good few hundred thousand worth of new lighting, but we didn't. We probably only got half of that revenue. So one way to look at it is like, well, you've lost the company, you know, half the business. But this is where the real big picture is. We are running out of resources. There are things that we're running out in 10 years, in 20 years. So a good example that I always use is copper. Copper is something that's used in almost all electrical cablings and a lot of different electronic components. Virgin ore of copper is forecasted to run out in 2040. So how are we going to make cables? The only way is to reuse. You take back from what is already existing in all these old buildings and projects and reuse them. We have to take a long-term view. As time goes on and as regulations come in, there are things like carbon tax, there's going to be things like laws where, you know, on sustainability, where you cannot be wasteful. You cannot throw something that is good. It will come. Companies like Trilux, who are leading the way in terms of, let's say, this refurbish and reuse, will have an advantage. So on the long run, we will have the advantage. Just talking about the Skanska examples, we've been approached by several other companies who want to do the same thing. And unlike maybe other companies, we have actually live examples to show them. So what the Skanska's project, you know, it started off being like a nice to do, great project. We've got a case study out and all that. It's actually exemplary. It can be a template to architects, designers, and owners of building that, there you go, look, this is another way to do it. More and more people are going to hear the concept of circular economy. So we take from Mother Earth the resources, we make something, and the end of the life, when we finish using it, we throw it. It goes to waste. But with circularity, it's all about where you do not throw, you manage things, you design things where things can be broken down, taken apart so that they can be repaired, they can be reassembled or remanufactured or refurbished. And then at the end of the life, you don't take and just throw it in a skip. You actually are able to reuse and repurpose it.
Yeah.
Circular economy that one day soon will be the norm.
Yes. When looking at this, well, very near future, what do you hope to see changing? Like, what do you hope changing for the positive in 10 years time?
10 years is a long time, Jessica. So if you ask me what I want to see changing is the kind of type of leaders we have. So let it be politicians, let it be CEOs of companies, is to see the leaders who are focused, they're not just focused on short-termism, yeah, not just looking at the short-term, they're having a long-term view. Why I say this is because a lot of the CEOs or even the politicians, they are looking at just their term. You know, I'm the prime minister for 4 years. This is all I want. I want to get votes. If it's a CEO of a company, oh, it's about the revenue for this year and next year. They don't look beyond. So it's really to get the leaders to change their mindset. Leaders who really care, who are empathetic, who are inspiring and courageous to do the right thing.
Yes, let's hope for that. Is there something in conclusion that you feel like, okay, this is still missing? I really need to tell the world this.
One thing that I would say is to do with urbanization. Today, the human population is around 7.8 billion. By 2050, it is projected that the population will be close to 10 billion. It is so huge that we cannot carry on in the same manner that we do today. I'm not going to preach here about, you know, oh, you have to cut down your meat or you have to reuse clothes or whatever. There's so many things that people have to think for themselves and do. But the reality is that what's going to happen, urbanization basically means that due to it's expensive to travel, it's a lot of carbon, there's a lot of different elements. People will tend to reside in megacities.
Yes.
Megacities are classed as cities that have got more than 10 million population. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, New Delhi has got something like 30 million population. Take Shanghai, New York, you know, UK is very close to being a megacity. They're about 9 point something million.
That's massive. I find it so hard to comprehend coming from the Netherlands and we just have tiny, tiny cities compared to that.
It's said that by the time we are close to, like, you know, 2050, the cities will be the mega cities you're talking about. Over 100 million people will live in one city. So if you're in the built environment, let it be if you're a lighting planner, you're an architect, or you're a building service engineer, if you're involved in the construction industry, we are all, and I say we, including Trilux as a manufacturer and designer of lighting and stuff like that, we are shaping these future cities, these future mega cities. So by being responsible, by doing and making the right choices in terms of the design and how you manufacture and how you deliver and how you work in partnership, what we do today would make a massive difference in the future.
Well, thank you. That's a really good message to conclude the podcast with, I think. Thank you very much.
It was lovely talking to you.
Thank you for your very interesting story.
Thank you, Jessica.
This was the Gibble Podcast with Vic Nanthan. Read more about him on getinspiredbylight.com. My next guests are Patrick Maas and Simon van Oldenbeek from Stellar Development.
It feels like we are this Swiss watchmaker. We don't think in problems. We act in solutions.
Get Inspired by Light is an initiative of Trilux.